I'm delighted to be here this morning with you again, and I appreciate being invited. I also like to remind people at the beginning of some of my sermons, and this is one of them, that ministers are called upon to comfort the afflicted and to afflict the comfortable. And I take both of those very seriously. And so if I happen to afflict you this morning, I would apologize, but I think it could bring about some really interesting conversations. And so I hope that after the service today, we can talk. I'd like to begin with a story, a story that changed my life. It was a story about a young woman named Liliana. She came to this country at the age of 19. She crossed the border without papers to join her family here. She had been a student in Mexico when her family left to come to this country, and she decided she wanted to stay in Mexico and finish her high school studies and graduate there, and so she did. And 2 years later, when she had graduated and decided it was time for her to come, she discovered that the waiting period had extended a great deal longer than that her parents had had to take. And so, being 19, we've all been there at one time or another, she just decided she was going to do it anyway. And so she did. She tried twice. The first time she had forged papers, but she admitted at the border that they weren't really hers and went back. But then she tried again and she was successful. She met her parents and her other siblings near Oxnard and settled down. She met a man, fell in love, they bought a house, had children, had jobs, paid taxes, and everything seemed to go very, very well. Until the morning of 2007, when some officers arrived at her front door and told her husband that they were here to pick up his wife, that she was undocumented and would have to be deported back to Mexico. At that point, she was holding her 8-month-old baby, nursing him, and the two other children were in the background, and she couldn't believe this was really happening. And her daughter said, "Why do you want to take my mommy? She's a good mommy." And her husband said, "She can't just leave today. We have 3 children. We have to make arrangements." And fortunately, those arrangements included getting in touch with clergy and lady United for Economic Justice of Los Angeles, who helped her to find a place to stay. She went to Sierra Madre, where she lived with the deacon and his wife, but they realized that that wasn't truly safe. And so she was moved to a church, interestingly enough, in Long Beach, where she and her infant son stayed for a number of months. And then realizing how difficult it was for the rest of the family, they tried to find a place that was closer to the family in Oxnard. And so that's how I discovered Liliana. I was a part of CLU of Ventura County, and our executive director made connections, and we moved her to a church in Simi Valley, a United Church of Christ that just happened to have a house on their property where she could be safe. Although there was no law that protected her, at least it was supposed to be that churches were safe places. And that's still true today. Churches are supposed to be safe places for people seeking sanctuary. But there's nothing that says that someone from ICE could not show up there. So she came to that church. They voted to accept that, very similar to our polity. They had to vote on it. And every 4 months for the next 3.5 years, they voted on it to continue to keep her in sanctuary. There were people who came from out of town with bullhorns every Sunday morning for several months, shouting terrible things about her and to her and the congregants as they were coming to church on Sunday morning. And so for about a year and a half, I was one of a number of volunteers who had to be at the house 24/7 in order to be there in case something were to happen. And although we didn't think it would happen, it was always just a little frightening to think that someone might come up and that there was no law that would protect us from their doing that. Now, I always had the night, or I shouldn't say always, usually had the night shift. So I had, this was really probably the best job. I got to play with the kids, have dinner, and then sleep all night until the next person came on the shift. But it changed my life in so many ways, I can't tell you, to get to know these people, to find out that they were not somehow, as we have heard so many times, animals, rapists, drug dealers. They were, in fact, genuinely wonderful human beings who wanted the best for themselves and their family and their children. After a year and a half, it was a little bit less dangerous, we felt, and we could slack off a little bit in our coverage, although we still kept contact and met with them and tried to provide services. And finally, after 3.5 years, Liliana was allowed to move back into the home with her husband and her children. Now a fourth baby had arrived, and this is a sad story and a happy story. When she discovered that she was pregnant, they were overjoyed, and then they realized that so many people might think, well, this is just another anchor baby. They're having another child so that to solidify their hold on being here in this country. I'm here to tell you that I learned a lot. It's been a steep learning curve for me since that early day when I met Liliana and her family. We know that people don't always say or do the right thing. And we know that people, good people, suffer. People who pay taxes, people who, well, at least after they were able to move to their home, could attend parent-teacher meetings, could go to school, concerts. But imagine yourself in a place where you couldn't go outside, at least off the property. You couldn't go to any of the performances that your children were doing at their schools. And then she still had to check in with ICE every few months just to pay them some more money and deliver her papers again to show that she had not done anything wrong over that period of time. But people ask, why don't they just get in line? Why don't they wait and come legally? And to that we have to say, there is no line. Today, if you want to make a legal entry into the United States, from Mexico at least, other countries are less serious difficulties, it could be as long as 10 years before you're able to come, if that, even with sponsorship. So there is no line. And the people who say, well, they just need to do it legally because this is against the law. We have to say, and in recent years even more so, there are no differentiations between a person who is a felon and a person who is a member of a family. And so people are separated from their families and children. And just recently, of course, we had that on a massive scale in this country. And so there is no line, unless you'd like to wait for 10 or sometimes more than 10 years. We know that there are derogatory characterizations. There were during the last election cycle, and there continue to be, that they are rapists and murderers and drug dealers and all kinds of other names. Maybe you read just recently there was a young man who on with a video. Someone took a video of this young man who was a wrestling champion at a white supremacy rally, who has now lost his wrestling scholarship because of some of the terrible, hateful things that he said. And this video went viral, of course. People don't seem to understand that words do hurt. Words do damage. And not just damage the people they're aimed at, but damage the fabric of our democracy. I was at a presentation not too long ago where the police chief in Santa Paula said, "You know, if all the people in this town were undocumented, my job would be so incredibly easy." And we're going, "What?" He said, "Because the percentage of serious felons in the undocumented community is so much less than in the native-born population." He said, "I could just sit back and relax." And of course, Santa Paula has a large number of immigrants. We don't know how many are undocumented. Many of these people are people who pay taxes, who pay Social Security, and for that they get very little. And maybe you didn't know, I didn't know when I started this exploration, and it has been an amazing journey. Did you know that there are 200 detention centers around the United States? So when you hear about deportation, that's only a very small percentage of the people who are being held in custody in 200 detention centers. The one where I visit once a month is Adelanta, which is in the Mojave Desert off of Peach Blossom Highway. There are 2,000 people at that facility at Adelanto. They are kept there with no programs, nothing to do all day, except they can work at a job for a dollar a day if there is a job available, cleaning the toilets or the rooms or working in the dining room. And these are run by, for the most part, capitalist, for-profit groups. GEO and CCA are the two largest, probably about 60% of those that run these facilities. When you go to those places and talk to those people, you hear stories that will break your heart. There are people who were fleeing from serious dangers in their homes, in their home countries. People who are just being warehoused. And these are all over our country, 9 in the state of California. And then there are the dreamers. The kids who were brought here by their parents when they were very young, who are now incredibly afraid. Maybe you've heard about the revocation of DACA. The fact that if you wanted to renew your DACA, you had to do it within a very limited time last year. That has since been overturned by judges, but there's still fear. And the kids who are afraid that when they come home from school one day, their parents will not be there because their parents will either be in a detention center or have been deported. I'm fortunate enough to be a part of a group that sponsors what we call Conejo Conexiones group in the high schools in the Conejo Valley, Thousand Oaks, where I live. These are students who have made it, who want to go to college, who live in fear and concern. What is their future? They don't know because it seems to change from day to day, month to month, as to what the law is to be. Right now, and I just worked with someone last week to try to get this taken care of, right now, students can renew their DACA status. That is, DACA is Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals. And all dreamers are not DACA recipients. You have to apply for that. And by the way, it costs $495 apiece. So these students are now allowed to renew, but not to sign up for the first time. And there's no guarantee that it won't be wiped or take the rug might be taken right out from under them at any time. And what if, in fact, their parents are deported or detained? The parents have to have left some sort of document as to where the children are supposed to be going. Because if they don't, they will be taken in by Child Protective Services. And who knows what may then happen to them. They'll be put in foster care. I know that immigration is a very complex issue. I think you probably know where I stand on this. But I know it's not easy. I know that making, you know, one thing that is a little puzzling to me is how you could think you're going to take away thousands of children from their families with no plan about how you're going to ever get them back together. Does that bother you? Certainly bothers me. And so we are afraid. There are at least 11 million undocumented people in the United States. And we know that it's not an easy thing to do, but you know what? You've got to start trying to do something about it instead of just throwing out anything that happens to come into your mind about what we want to do. But unfortunately, our Congress has not been able or willing to do that. But I have some good news, too. So this is not a total downer. You don't have to go home saying, oh, it was really depressing in church today. She told us all kinds of terrible things, and I haven't finished with those either. But let me give you a little bit of lightness, and that is Liliana's story has ended, well, it's not ended yet, has progressed well. She now has her green card, and by December, she will be able to apply for U.S. citizenship. All of her family are naturalized American citizens, including her husband. Her children are all American citizens because they were born here. But she still remains, and we hope that everything goes as planned. But here's the difficulty. She is only one of the numbers of people who are in this state of limbo right now. And this is the funny part of it. We were so excited when she got her green card. Big celebration. We were congratulating the pro bono lawyer who had been working with us. We're doing such a fine job. And he said, wait. Yeah, I filed some papers. We did some good things. But the thing that really made the difference was that someone from CLU was able to get two Catholic bishops to go and speak with the ICE director in Los Angeles, who happened to be a Catholic, who said, yes, she can have her green card. So she was a lucky one, and she was one of so many. Our current system keeps families apart. And we're not just talking about physical damage. We're talking about psychological damage. How would it feel to you if you were called illegal? If you were an illegal alien? I don't know. It's not perhaps the worst thing that somebody could say about you. But if you heard it over and over again, not only your physical self, but your psychological and spiritual self would shrink just a little bit. Illegal is dehumanizing. People are not illegal. People may be undocumented, but people are not illegal. And so if there is no other thing you remember from today, and I hope you'll remember a fair amount, please say undocumented immigrant rather than illegal alien or even illegal immigrant. It is a personal attack, a a physical, spiritual, psychological attack. And here's some more good news. See, I'm not just telling you all bad news. Here's some more good news. We as Unitarian Universalists can be proud of our stance on these issues. At a number of GAs, starting as early as 1961, immigrant rights have been part of our discussion and voting for statements of conscience, for all kinds of resolutions, and even at our most recent General Assembly, a statement of conscience was issued. Immigration as a moral issue for 4-year study, and it was passed overwhelmingly. And at the recent GA, an action of immediate witness to stop family separation and here was the tough one, and abolish ICE. Immigration and customs. And people say, well, how can we abolish ICE? Those functions have to take place, have to be done by someone. Yes, they do. But the way in which ICE has been used, and perhaps you've read about this too, they show up with shirts that sometimes say police on the back. And these folks don't necessarily know whether they should answer or not. Another kind of funny story is that people have learned that if they don't open their door to these people, if they do not have a federal, and this is a federal mandate, they cannot enter. But if someone shows up at your door and they're in a uniform and they look like they're official, then how would you know not to let them in? So this one woman decided she wanted to cover all her bases, knew that her little 4-year-old daughter was the one who usually let people in the door. She said, do not let anyone in this house who knocks at the door. And so this woman's very closest friend shows up one day and the little girl won't let her in. She was just doing what her mommy told her to do. So here's what we can do. Some of the things, and I know that you may or may not feel up to that, but remember the reading we talked about. Being an ally is great. It's wonderful. It says, I feel with you. But I can be an ally sitting in my living room, not really doing much of anything. Or I could be an ally who actually at least signs up. Do you get all these petitions on email? And they want you to sign about this thing and the other thing. You know, you could sign a few petitions. That would be being a good ally. But what these people need is advocates. People who will stand up. And I don't mean physically stand up, but simply find ways to make a difference. Maybe you want to go on one of our Unitarian Universalist Justice Ministry border trips to find out something about it from the other side of the border. To go to Friendship Park on a Sunday where people from the U.S. can come down and people from Mexico, this is in Tijuana, can meet. But do you know that the wall there is open, but it has overlapping metal 20 feet high partitions. And so people can't touch. You can't get your hand through. And so they can just look kind of sideways through the metal plates to see each other on Sunday. And the place where this is held is called Friendship Park. A little bit of irony there. Because people can't even, you know, you talk about seeing your mother, your father, your husband, your wife, your children. You can stop people when they say things that are derogatory toward immigrants. How many times have we heard things that people say and just kind of let it pass? A joke? Some sort of negative connotation? And let me assure you, I don't think that every single undocumented immigrant is a wonderful, wonderful, wonderful person. All the ones I've met are. But I understand that there are probably some undocumented people out there that are not good people. But as Unitarian Universalists, it seems to me that we have to give our compassion, our concern, our caring to help people to find a way. Maybe you go by, and we do in Ventura County, there are lots of fields on each side of the freeway going up between Thousand Oaks and Ventura. And rain or shine, the people are out in those fields. And I don't know, if any of you ever picked strawberries for a day? Okay. So you know what kind of hard work it is, right? Leaning over, and it's an art. It's not just a job. To do this well, because you've got to have the best ones and do it so that you don't lose any. And I think of what it would be like to be out there all day without water, with limited bathroom breaks, with the possibility of being sprayed with pesticides, or at least in a field next to yours. We were lucky enough to go to the rally in Washington, D.C. I was really concerned because they were having rallies back in our area, and we were not going to be back for them. And so my husband managed to say, you know, well, there's one in Washington, D.C. We'll be close to there. So we went with 30,000 other people, and there were those all over the country. There will be others. Something you can do. You can call your legislators. You can do innumerable things. You can work with students. If you know some students who are either just dreamers or if they have DACA, to work with them, to try to help them feel less afraid. You can go visit a detention center. I'm not sure what the closest detention center would be to here. Does anyone know? Oh, Lacey, okay. And it does not, as you may know, have a terribly good reputation. We have so far in our area, when we go to Adelanto, had no difficulty with getting in to visit. But it's another life-changing experience to talk to people face-to-face, to hear their stories and find out that they are not perhaps the people that you thought they were. So we need to be advocates in whatever way, and you get to decide what works for you. I know that things that I may do may not work for you, and so you need to figure it out. And I believe that we must take a united public stand for immigrants' rights, to protect them, to support sanctuary communities. I know that some of the city councils have had votes, sometimes very contentious meetings. I hope none of you had to be subjected to that. Fortunately, in Thousand Oaks, the meeting, of course, went on until 1 a.m., but the city simply decided not to take a stand on SB 54, or as I like to say, it's really the Values Act now. People keep talking about SB 54 as a sanctuary state. That was when it was going before the Senate. It's passed now. It's been signed by the governor. It's the Values Act. And so the question is, what are our values as Unitarian Universalists? What values do we want to be known for in the community? Or being allies who maybe take a back seat? Or being people who speak our truth? Who speak our truth in love? but who nevertheless speak our truth. And a great inspiration for me is in our hymnal, a reading by Edward Everett Hale, who is a Unitarian minister. He says, "I am only one, but still I am one. I cannot do everything, but still I can do something. And because I cannot do everything, I will not refuse to do the something I can do." I encourage you to educate yourselves, find out what you can, talk with others, to recognize that these people are not just statistics. They're people like you and me, families who deserve justice, equity, and compassion, and that they are all a part of the interdependent web of all existence of which we are a part. So I invite you now, as advocates, to come, whoever you are. And whoever they are, may it be so.